I think a lot of it was cumulative. I mean, again, we've now gone through two complete years where we're underfunding social services, greatly underfunding higher education, healthcare, and we're piling up these huge, you know, $15 billion worth of debts. The damage in the math became overwhelming. You know, we were getting to the point where, from a cash flow standpoint, we couldn't cover all of the bases. Just the cumulative impact of all the harm that's being done, and the fact that we were starting to threaten schools because we're already short on the money that we're giving them, even though it's been appropriated, and we were going to start having to, you know, make even tougher trade-offs in terms of the funding. And so I think it was cumulative, and I think the governor was not making any more progress. And I think it became a point where people just said, destroying the state is not worth what we might get out of this in terms of the non-budget items.
At least by virtue of his veto pen or veto stamp, it would seem the governor disagrees with you. He seems to be willing to stand his ground. Is that just for show at this point?
No, I think the governor firmly believes if he were to prevail, a decade from now, people would be thanking him. Because of his lack of experience in government, he wants everything he wants, and he thinks the only way to get it is to just keep applying leverage until the other side breaks. The irony of all of this may be, you know, we'll get some, you know, pension property tax freeze, you know, some the turnaround agenda items. You know, he'll probably get a weaker set of turnaround items, if he gets them at all, than he could have gotten in the spring of 2015. So I think it is, you know, it is a combination of you know, his perspective, which is, you know, long term, and you know, and his and the fact his lack of comprehension about how the political system works, you know, has to work, that got us to this point. And so I don't doubt his sincerity. Now, I mean, obviously, the way he wrote the veto message, he's positioning himself to, you know, to run for re-election. You know, they forced me to do it. And, you know, if you just would have had a few more strong Republican legislators, and if you put me back into office, you know, I'll be able to, you know, get the job done, sort of. You know, I mean, you can see the campaign ads now.
We're speaking this morning with Illinois political historian Kent Redfield. Kent, you've taken me almost to the doorstep of the next question I wanted to ask you, and that's ultimately, other than the people of Illinois, who I think clearly you could say over the past 2 years have been the losers in this, who are the political winners and losers? Who came out looking good?
It's some individual legislators. You know, probably, you know, I mean, although the comptroller has been partisan in terms of her rhetoric, I mean, she has handled herself, you know, I think very well in this. You know, the damage to Speaker Madigan's brand is probably irreparable in terms of how the round of people have been able to demonize him. The damage to the legislature as an institution, I think, is has been huge. We've got good people leaving. I'm hard pressed to find a lot of winners, particularly from the standpoint that what we've just done kind of gets us to even, and now we have to pay off $15 billion worth of debt and undo all of this damage that we have inflicted on higher education, on the social, on the non-for-profit networks, state employees in terms of, good people have left the state, good people have, state government, good people have left the legislature. And so, I'm hard-pressed to find very many winners in terms of all of this.
I want to ask you one last question.
Sure.
What's the possibility that we're back in this same position in July of 18?
Well, I don't think in July of 18, because I think everybody wants to show that they can make government work. The problem is that even because we haven't changed the tax structure, we just raised the income tax rate, and because, you know, we've got all of this built-in spending that, you know, that we didn't sit down and really think through, you know, what do we need to do, how do we need to go about it. The model should be, let's assume we get a school aid, you know, a new school aid formula that kind of everybody agrees, kind of an evidence-based model that kind of puts new money in, you know, in the poor districts. That should have happened across the board. I mean, that would be a very positive thing, and it should have happened in terms of our tax structure. It should have happened in terms of you know, the balance between state funding and property tax funding for schools. I mean, there's just all of those reforms that changes that need to take place so that we can, you know, actually plan for the future and not go from, you know, budget to budget. And, you know, we're going to have to basically try to, you know, make it from one fiscal year to the next as we dig our way out of this hole, and, you know, without, and we haven't made the changes in how we deliver services, and we haven't made the changes in, you know, that need to be done in terms of making the state more business friendly. This didn't have to turn out this way, and it means that you know, the positive, you know, the changes that we have to make to get us on a long-term track, you know, those conversations and those solutions have been delayed.
Ken Redfield, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, sure. Anytime.